Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hello, Guilty Feminists. This is Deborah. This is our first show ever recorded remotely and our first show ever recorded not in front of an audience. We hope you enjoy it. We did it over Zoom and we will be alternating these kinds of shows. They're recorded from the quarantine bunker with shows that we recorded in January and February this year while we were on tour. So we hope to give you some Guilty Feminist nights out and some Guilty Feminist nights in. If you're one of the people that's supporting us on Patreon because we no longer have ticket sales, then we appreciate you so much. I've just had news that 997 of you have signed up for Patreon. Thank you so, so much. If you'd like to be one of the three people that get us to 1,000, we'd appreciate it so much. And we understand at this time not everyone has the money to do that. But if you can, we'd appreciate it so much. And otherwise, if you could amplify us, post about us, link to a favourite episode of yours, that would help us so much as well. And now on with the podcast.
I'm a feminist, but I have discovered different places for Zoom calls in my flat where the lighting is optimal at different times of day. So at 4 p.m, I sit in the downstairs bedroom on the floor by the bay window and I look like a fucking movie star.
I'm a feminist, but the only thing that I'm watching that's keeping my attention right now in the end times is like really problematic erotic thrillers from the 90s. So like Michael Douglas, Basic Instinct, things like that, that when they don't hold up, but man, are they good.
Fatal Attraction.
Yeah, Fatal Attraction. Along Came a Spider, Kiss the Girls.
Wow. Can I recommend The Hand That Rocks the Cradle?
Love it. Love it. I'm way ahead of you, Deb.
Listen, I'm not saying it's a feminist piece. I'm saying it's the global epidemic and it could be the end of the world. So
yeah.
Fuck it. 90s thrillers with questionable messages about strong women. Let's have them.
All the women are like nymphomaniac murderers.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's hot. It's a fantasy. And also, it's where we're all headed, to be honest. If we're in quarantine for 4 months, which of us will not be a nymphomaniac murderess? I mean, it's the only place to go.
Yeah.
I'm a feminist, but if I ever in my life suspect we will be quarantined again, I will immediately move into my flat on free rent, someone who can blow dry hair and teach yoga. And ideally, candidates who are applying, they'll be paid for all their services. They'll have full free rent. I will make them breakfast, whatever they want. It'll be a full length of lockdown deal for them. I will be looking for candidates who ideally also can do excellent liquid eyeliner and eyelashes.
I'll do it.
That's ideal for the Zoom. Will you say you'll do it, May? Are you skilled in that?
No, I'll give it a go, though. If it's free rent?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love to live with you.
The services. Well, you better start upskilling.
Okay, I'm going to practice the eyeliner. I think I could blow dry pretty good.
Okay. Yeah. All right, well, listen.
I mean, no, you're going to end up looking like Justin Bieber, but...
Listen, I would take anything at the moment. My skin is so dry. Oh, that's right. You can massage. You went to school to
I'm a registered shiatsu masseuse. Thank you so much for putting that out there. Yeah, I've never done it. I hate it. I did two years full time, Monday to Friday. It cost $6,000. I've never done it since.
Well, listen, if for whatever reason your flat situation doesn't work out, Steve's gone to live in the country with friends.
Okay.
So there is a possible opening there.
This is good to know. If my roommate becomes a nymphomaniac murderer, I can relocate.
I'm going to need to be guaranteed you're not a nymphomaniac murderer at the point you want to move in.
Can't promise anything.
If you want to join my household.
I'm a feminist, but my mum has just got into stock trading, and I feel bad that I really don't trust her with the family's money.
Oh, wow.
I want to be supportive because it's a new passion of hers, but I'm like, why now? And also, have you read about it? Like, she's really freestyling.
Does she just gamble your inheritance away daily?
Yes, possible. Yeah, yeah.
You know what? She might make some serious dosh there.
Do you think? Buy low, sell high?
I don't know. Why are you asking me? I'm days away from being a nymphomaniac murderess. I'm a feminist, but I am secretly incredibly jealous and a little bit annoyed by the amount of lovely feminists who I see every day on Instagram Live who are somehow coping with this so well and somehow don't seem to have jobs anymore. I'm trying to get my whole life online and I'm melting down every other day. And somehow they have time to bake fresh banana bread, learn the ukulele, and make origami animals.
Yeah.
I want that for myself. Oh, they're all reading the entire works of Maya Angelou. I would love that. When will this day come for me? I feel so stressed, so busy, so emotionally up and down. If I tried to make banana bread, it would be made from my tears.
Yeah, it'd be salty.
And I would definitely burn it and destroy it and throw it on the ground and say, what's the point of anything anyway?
I'm a feminist, but I've been watching... Well, not that this isn't feminist, though, but I've just been watching shitloads of porn. Really, so much. And then also, I went on Chat Roulette. Have you been on that? Chat Roulette.
I've not.
It's just random people in the world, and it's mostly just guys wanking, but it's just a close-up of... I went on it just to watch some guys
wank. Has anybody said, oh my God, you're Mae Martin from Feel Good?
Well, no, I don't put my face in it.
Oh! So what do you put?
It's just... Between my legs. No, I'm joking. I just turned my camera off.
What?
I just turned my camera off. So I'm just a black screen and they know someone's watching and they like it. Look, I did it like once.
Oh, no, yeah. I'm not judging. I'm just understanding. I couldn't work out what you're doing. So the roulette for them is they don't know who's watching. And the roulette for you is you don't know what you're watching.
Yeah, and sometimes you get like-minded people. So it's just some weird lonely girl trying to find some dicks and you match up. And then
like-minded people. Wow. Yeah. How do you know though? So if it's a weird lonely girl wishing to see an erect penis, do you then turn your camera on and go, hey?
I mean, I'm not doing this all the time, but yeah, that maybe I'll meet my spouse that way. Like we'll both be looking for the same thing.
Beautiful story for your grandchildren.
Yeah.
Who you will only be able to talk to on a screen in the apocalypse anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll never meet your grandchildren. Mm-mm. I mean, I'll be sequestered at birth. This is a sad story. I'm joking. It's gallows humour, everybody. Breathe. Breathe in and out. Breathe with the Guilty Feminist. Breathe through the quarantine. From a variety of bedrooms and kitchens across London, the Spontaneity Shop presents The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Frances White, guest co-host Mae Martin, and very special guest Charlotte Ritchie, talking about feeling good.
Yay!
Woo! This is The Guilty Feminist, the podcast in which we explore our noble goals as 21st century feminists and the hypocrisies and insecurities which undermine them. I'm Deborah Frances White, with me is Mae Martin, and we're talking about feeling good. So, Mae Martin, this is the first show we've ever done of The Guilty Feminist, not in front of a live audience.
How does it feel?
It feels very strange because I'm looking at you on what I would think of traditionally as a Skype call. It's in fact Zoom.
Yeah.
And I can see, I'm just going to tell the audience who I can see. I can see Tom Selinski, the producer, both at the end of my table because we're quarantined together, but also in one of these little windows on screen. I can see Grace Petrie and Ben Moss, who are going to do a song later and are acting really in the interim as ersatz audience. Thank you. We're so grateful. Do chip in at any point, though. I'm looking at Mae Martin, my guest co-host.
Hello.
And I'm looking at Charlotte Ritchie, our guest.
Hello.
Who's going to join us in inverted commas later.
Hello, Charlotte. Hi.
Hey. So yeah, this is our first bunker ep.
I like it. I'm in my...
We're all quarantined.
I'm in my bed, so I love it.
I just did a Instagram live from my bed.
It's great, isn't it?
It is pretty great, actually. And I do think one of the things we're going to take forward into the new world when we're allowed out, that will happen, and I believe in the end of this. I need to keep talking about the other side.
Yeah.
Much like religious people believe in the afterlife. I do think one of the things that we might take with us is our pace of life was so manic and frenetic. And I think half of the meetings I had, I want to be in rooms with people. And the other half, we're now going to say, could this be a Zoom call? Can I just stay in my bed?
I think that will happen. Yeah, I think you're right. One thing that's happened for me is become really close with my roommate. Very, very dependent now. Now we're in like a really codependent situation. Every day we discuss what we're going to have for dinner. We have cocktail hour. We play poker. I taught her poker. And then she's beat me three tournaments in a row. And I gave her a hug yesterday. First hug.
Wow. Big moment.
Yeah. I think I've hugged her once when drunk. But yeah, this is the first sober, like, can I have a hug? So, you know, the floodgates have opened now.
I feel like this whole episode is like being drunk or hormonal or on MDMA or all three.
Oh, great. Is that how you're feeling?
Well, I just feel up and down and sideways. I just feel like I never know how I'm going to feel. Yeah. I've been really taking control and like creating schedules for myself. I do a personal training on Zoom every morning. I go for a walk every day, my government issued walk that I'm allowed to have before they take it away, which they might. Because I was just talking to someone in Spain. They've taken the walk away. That's all right. That's all right. If they take it away and it saves lives, that's all right. That's all right. I'll be fine. I'm good. I'll be good. I'll be good. I'll be good.
It'll oh my God.
It'll be fine. But
I'm in pure escapism. Like I just have to go moment to moment, I think, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm only thinking about getting through this week. That's all I'm thinking about. But do you know what? Some of it has centered me, grounded me, allowed things like really daily exercise things to happen at the same time. And some of that's been very calming, actually. And I don't want to be talking about silver linings because I know people have died, real people have died, and it's hard for us to imagine that because we're all trapped in our houses and people are sick. So I don't want to be going, oh, but look how much my yoga's improved. Like, you know, it's kind of not okay. But we also are human beings. We need to look at silver linings and we need to look at what we can control. And so I feel like having a routine has really helped me, but I'm a very unroutined person. And now I've become almost manically routined to the extent where when my delivery lunch didn't turn up today because the delivery man went to the wrong place and my blood sugar crashed, I got very upset, like really upset in a way that I would never normally get upset if my lunch seemed to be lost in London somewhere.
Yeah, you've become rigid.
Rigid, mate.
You developed a thick shell of rigidity.
I'm so rigid. I'm the most fluid, flexible person in the world. I bounce from thing to thing, you know. Grace and I just toured. When did I ever get up at the same time, Grace? When did I ever go to bed at the same time? When did I eat at the same time? Never.
It was a lawless land.
but now, oh my God, if my blood sugar dips or I have a conference call run over and then I can't do the next thing at the right time or I miss my walk or something like that, my emotional stability is not what it was. I'll say that. It's going to get better. It's getting better all the time. I'm coping extremely well for nearly all of the day. But when I don't cope as if I'm a toddler who's just lost all of their toys and will never see those toys again.
How is it for Tom living with that toddler?
Tom is an even-keeled man. I often say that I'm not sure whether Tom is a man or a Black Mirror app. And that is so lucky right now because he rarely glitches.
Good.
And he is a very steadying, calming influence on my life. And so he's been very supportive. I also have been very kind to him as well. We're being very kind to each other, very kind and patient with each other.
That's good to hear. I'm glad.
We have to. We have no one else. I can only legally storm out once a day.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, literally, if you have a fight, you're just stuck here. You're just like, okay, well, now we're not speaking.
I've got into cheese strings. Like, I haven't eaten them since I was a kid. And I've been going to, when I grocery shop, I'm making impulse purchases, little things to cheer myself up. A cheese string, you know, that could be a creative part of your day. How do you eat it? Yeah. How long does it take you? I've been cooking more. I mean, these are like you say, it's weird saying silver linings because it's like, you know.
No, but we're human and we have to make lemonade out of this daily quantity of, it's just so many lemons are dropped in my flat every morning. It's like the whole house is filled with lemons.
People
have panic bought the sugar.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So it's really difficult to make the quantity of lemonade that I need to get rid of the lemons. I'm doing all right.
I really miss stand-up and I miss, should we say the things we miss? No, come on.
Yes.
No.
People want to hear. People want to hear because they also, I think the problem is everyone's Instagramming live the moment when they've just made a margarita and put on a funny hat.
Yeah.
And so people aren't hearing about any of the sad stuff. And they're thinking, Am I the only one rocking and crying?
No. Make no mistake about it. We're all rocking and crying. Like, I miss stand-up. Usually the things that keep my brain normal are stand-up and the gym and, like, NA meetings and, you know, and all those things are gone. So I'm having to be really creative and structured. I miss so many things. I miss Charlotte Ritchie. I miss lots of things. Hiya.
Mm. See you now.
How do NA meetings happen and AA meetings happen? Are they happening on Zoom?
I don't know, really. I haven't looked into it enough because it feels weird. So much of it is about being in the room and to be honest, the anonymity, and you just never know with Zoom meetings, like if people are going to, I don't know. It just feels...
I know what you mean. That's a really important point, the anonymity.
Yeah.
Could you do it a little bit? Could you mix up? Could you do NA roulette?
Well, I could just ask the dicks that I'm watching jizz if they have any advice.
You could talk them through what you're experiencing and feeling.
Yeah. Oh God.
This is a really good point, though. I had not thought of AA.
Well, I mean, this is the time where it would have been great if I had a sponsor, but I had not got around to doing that, and I've never really done that. And now I'm thinking, fuck, that would be really valuable.
Can you call Sophie Thompson your sponsor in the show? I'm sure she'd be very helpful.
I think she'd be similar to Maggie in that she'd be like, I don't know.
She'd deliver you some tequila.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So we should talk about your show. So you have an incredible show and I cannot recommend it highly enough. And I'm really not saying that because I'm a friend of yours, May. You sent it to me because I had to interview you at the National Theatre like last year. And I got like a sneak preview that wasn't even graded or anything. And I was thought, I'll just do what I normally do, which is I watch one or two episodes. Enough that I can discuss it with the person. And I was really late at night, so I was like, oh, I'll watch episode 1 and 2. It'll be fine. I stayed up so late. I binged the whole thing from end to end, not because I was interviewing you, because I was completely compelled. And I was so grateful I had all 6 episodes because I thought I wouldn't be able to sleep otherwise. I was so taken with it.
Thank you so much.
The beauty of it, the charm of it, the beauty of it, the uniqueness of it. And it was deeply funny and extremely moving. It really made me realize how little we see women in same-sex relationships represented anywhere.
Right. Yeah. Cool.
And if we do, it's kind of two femme women. It feels like it's directed by a man to titillate straight cis men sometimes. It doesn't feel the way that it felt. And I felt, what I felt was it's just this beautiful romantic comedy with all of these themes and I got all of this new understanding from it. Okay, I'm just going to come out with it and be honest. It was one of the things that helped me open up my marriage and explore my bisexual side.
Wow.
Yeah, May's face is quite surprised because I haven't told her that.
That's huge. Yeah. I'm so, so pleased. I mean, I'm watching Tom's face too. yeah, that's great. How exciting. Yeah, I hope that it makes people think about things.
Tom's put his hand over the camera so as not to intimidate people now. I had imagined talking about this on this episode, but I'd imagined it maybe at King's Place with 500 people in the audience and
big cheer, you know, and yeah. Well, people are cheering at home, Deb. I know you have a lot of LGBT fans going to be pumped about that open marriage.
I will be on chat roulette later this evening.
I'll see you there. Yeah, that's really nice. And the main thing that has been great in the response to it so far has been people just relating in general to the themes and addiction and intimacy. And I think hopefully those things transcend labels. And so it's accessible to lots of people. And then we're sort of sneakily broadening people's minds rather than overtly or in a kind of soapboxy way. Like my co-writer Joe Hampson is the quintessential straight white guy, and it's very much his story as well. What's more universal than love, right?
The one thing I will say, May, about the timing of it, because I got to see it before everyone else, and most people have got to see it in lockdown. I saw it before lockdown, and as I said, it opened me up. But I have to say, it's not the best time to open your relationship up. due to the fact that almost as soon as I did it, the government made it illegal for me to hook up with anybody who's not my husband. So
it's a really bad time for dating in general, but maybe get on chat roulette. Get on Thrinder.
What's Thrinder?
Thrinder is Tinder for couples, where you can meet a third and chat to them.
I thought you were going to say it's Tinder for Judge Rinder, no?
Tinder for, oh my God.
Just to meet Judge Rinder.
Had a specific Tinder, that would be great.
I just saw him on House Party, actually.
Did you actually? really? No way.
Yeah, I didn't say hi yet, but I will. Yeah, no, he's the nicest guy. I will say, if you watch this show, it might make you a bit frisky, and just be alert to that, because you are in a global lockdown and we have no idea when the government might let you hook up with anybody ever again. So this is a nice place in the meantime, but it's also about addiction. It's also about friendship. It's also about coping mechanisms.
Parental relationships.
Yes, Lisa Kudrow plays your mom.
Yeah, big time she does. Yeah, I can't believe it.
Do you know my favorite moment when I interviewed May at the National Theatre, and I asked you about non-binariness, and you said, yeah, I think if I was coming of age now, I would identify as non-binary, but, you know, I've sort of grown into myself as a woman. And the audience were just like, oh, sure. And then I said, and Lisa Kudrow is playing your mum, and they went ballistic. The audience went, oh!
Yeah.
You saying, yeah, I would identify as non-binary now. Nothing. It was flatline. It was like, yeah, sure, whatever.
So didn't give
Lisa
a shit.
Kudrow's play. I
thought I was making a big statement. That was like a big moment for me. No one cared.
They did not care about that particular piece of identity coming out.
No, but what people cared about Lisa.
Phoebe from Friends being your mum, the gasp went on for it was a ripple gasp. It was a mini orgasm.
That was so fun doing that, because we showed a clip of the show. This is months before it came out, and it was the first date scene, and it was so nice because I think there are a lot of your fans in the audience, Deb, and just a really cool audience. And at the first kiss, people just went nuts and they were screaming, and it was like, that's exactly what I want.
It was so beautiful. And everyone has been in touch with me who was at the National Theatre. So many people from that audience have been like, it's coming out, it's coming out. And I've seen such an overwhelming response to it on the internet. So could you just sum it up? Could you just tell us what this show is?
Yeah, I can try. It's a semi-autobiographical comedy drama about a recovering addict comedian called May, who's living in London, and she starts a new relationship with someone who's never been with a girl before, and they have all kinds of problems, but it's a very romantic love story. It sounds heavy, but it's a comedy.
Our guest today is an actor you will know from TV shows including Fresh Meat, Doctor Who, Call the Midwife, and her new show with Mae Martin, Feel Good. It's Charlotte Ritchie!
Yay!
Hello. Thank you for that intro. It's made me feel good.
Well, Charlotte Ritchie, I think the most important thing on your CV is a sketch you did for Comic Relief with me, which was actually a parody of the show Friends.
Really?
And this was the first time we ever spoke about this podcast. This was how many years ago? A few.
Yeah. Four.
And I've always been too scared to... You asked me once and I was too scared when you first started it. I was too scared to come on and now I'm courageous and I'm here. I'm so glad.
Here you are.
Thank you for having
me. Yes, indeed.
Wait, who did you guys play in the sketch?
It was a really clever idea.
Gunther. Was Charlotte Gunther?
Charlotte was not Gunther.
I wish.
So it was Massive Dad who wrote it and invited us to do it, which was a huge honour. And it was for Comic Relief. And Charlotte played a sort of unsuspecting young woman who was being taken back to someone's flat for a date. And what she didn't know was that it was a sitcom flat. So it was like a friend's flat.
It was either I was being brought back or I was being, I was like a prospective housemate that was being shown around to like show how the house worked. And it was
that's
just
right.
In every room there was somebody doing something dumb with a like a studio audience. But I was a real person really thinking it was a real flat. It was a great sketch.
That's great.
It was. So and it was the other person was saying, yeah, the rent's really cheap, so I just overlook these things.
Yes.
And there was a kind of guy coming out doing a kind of how you do
it. Yeah, it was a joke.
And then
you
could hear this audience laugh.
And like light switches that didn't do anything. Remember that?
Yes.
Can we watch it again? Is it online still?
Yes, we could insert it, actually.
Yeah.
We could or we could direct people in the show
interlude.
Notes. Yeah.
Pop it in. Just pop it in.
I played a Janice-like neighbour who kept popping in at inappropriate times. and I came up with my own catchphrase, which was, Su casa, mi casa.
That's a great catchphrase.
So good. I really distinctly remember meeting you, Deborah. Like, I remember sort of most... It's like so clear in my mind. We were sitting behind the set and we were talking. I remember talking to you and you talking about this podcast and me just being impressed that you were doing something.
It must have been quite new, I think, at that point. But also,
yeah,
this is
really
a real
new.
I'm a feminist butt confession, Charlotte.
Yeah.
But they had originally said, oh, we want you to play an old neighbour. Oh. And I'd said, oh, when I read it, I thought she was really young and glamorous and sort of, but, you know, really over the top like Janice. And they said, oh, well, you could play it that way. And I only brought that costume because I thought, I'm not. They said, bring dowdy,
absolutely
ill-fitting
not.
Clothes. And I was like, I don't think so. I am not going to be in this sketch in dowdy clothes. So I brought...
No, they got the wrong woman for that.
I know, and this is terrible. This is how you know I'm not a real actress, that I'm a comedian rather than actress, because actors love character. But I love to look glamorous. So I brought a Vivian Westwood dress with a bodice that was off the shoulder that made me really kind of...
You looked amazing.
Sort of gave me an hourglass figure. And I had false eyelashes, full makeup. I really went over the top. Then they said, oh, this is fabulous. And they had no idea I'd done it for reasons of vanity.
They didn't need to know. You didn't need to tell anybody that. That could have been your own secret.
I know, but I remember getting put in the middle of the group photo because I had the most ostentatious costume and I was an incidental character.
That is the way to do it.
My agent at the time said, well done, well done. That was really good. Really
well done.
But look, apart from that, which was the highlight of your career and the biggest thing on your IMDb, this show seems to be doing terribly well, Feel Good. And I just think it's perfect bunker watching. How was it to make?
It was so good. It's a real gem of a job to work on. I mean, we had lots of fun, like just as a general note, like it was amazing to get to hang out that much. That was really great because we had a lot before, but this was like an intense period of hanging out and that was just amazing. And the show, for me personally, like just it's rare that you get to sort of have a character that's that like nuanced and interesting and flawed and reflective and all that stuff, and to be in a show that you find funny and touching. Like, sorry to sound like the back of the DVD cover, but I really love it. May, how did you find it?
Absolute nightmare. No, yeah. I had the best time. Yeah, I mean,
you guys
I was
were friends, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we met in 2012. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Was
2011.
In. I think I'm going to say 2012 actually.
Okay.
Confidently.
Okay.
I'm going to say August, August 15th, 2012. Yeah, we were in Edinburgh at the Fringe and I was staying in this big flat with about 10 people in this tiny flat. And then everyone was like really buzzed about Charlotte Ritchie coming up to visit. So much buzz around it. Charlotte Ritchie's coming.
This
Charlotte
is
Ritchie's
bullshit.
Coming. No, this is 100% true.
Is that because you were doing Fresh Meat at the time?
No, just because she was a friend of theirs. And everyone was like, she's the best. You're going to love Charlotte Ritchie. She's so great. And I was immediately...
And you were like, wah.
I took an instant dislike. No, I think I was like suspicious because I was like, who is this Charlotte Ritchie?
Jealous. Cross.
And then You slept on the sofa and there were mice around.
Is that where I stayed? And then I... I think that's where I stayed and I farted in the night and
yes.
It woke my friend Jamie up. But I blamed it on Joe.
Yeah.
Who wrote the show. So Joe Hansen was also, staying at that flat.
And I'm so glad you put that story out into the world.
I blamed it on him. And I told him about 3 years later.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough to wake someone up.
Pros and cons of working with a friend, especially on a romantic story?
Well, the pros are, I think, that I have never acted before and I'm very scared. And so I think a huge part of any relationship is a friendship anyway. Like a huge part of a romantic relationship is a friendship. So it was great to have that shortcut of rapport and that I find Charlotte funny. And also that I like care about her and feel protective of her, and I get upset if she's mad at me. So obviously, having never acted before, that makes it easier. When someone's mad at you, you're like,
yeah,
oh no.
Behind the scenes, yeah. It does give you a shortcut into all those feelings. It does hurt twice as much when you see that person being upset.
Yeah.
It gives it a depth, I think, that takes a long time to create if you don't have that background, probably. But I agree with all those things. It does also make, like at the beginning, we were extremely awkward and giggly. Like in a very sort of childish way. Our rehearsals were essential.
We did a pilot for it a few years ago. And I think that we were really lucky that we were able to do that because that got a lot of the nerves out of the way. And when Charlotte first auditioned, we laughed so much that all the producers were like, oh, this can't work.
Yeah.
And then she had to.
Again. Yeah.
We did it again. Yeah. And we had a drink. But yeah, we had a really unusual amount of rehearsal time. So like 2 weeks to just go through it and find like, I'm not very good at eye contact, let alone.
Oh yeah, that took a long time to get actually.
It took a long time.
And
you're a very experienced actor, Charlotte. So eye contact is your bread and butter. So did you find yourself coaching the stand-up comic that is Mae Martin into that space with you to trust you?
Well, it's interesting because as much as like there's been lots that I've done, this is also quite an unusual thing in terms of creating such a kind of intimate and like long-lasting relationship on screen. Like I feel like it is so like particularly personal and to do with our relationship. I don't think I've had that before, so that was still kind of new territory for me. So there was quite an equal amount of like blushing and not able to do eye contact for ages. Because you kind of have to get to a level of like comfort and stuff that you have to work to. It's like we were talked a lot about the sort of how people who have been together just have this automatic intimacy that is kind of reflexive. Like it just is a reflex that happens as opposed to it being something that's kind of. And so that was good that we got that prep time. But it still felt like a kind of real new thing for me too.
Our director made us look each other in the eye and then just say the sex scene out loud, which was really hard.
I wrenched that out of my head.
Yeah, that was
absolutely
really hard.
Absolutely excruciating. That sounds like the worst day ever.
Yeah.
I'm currently in quarantine, imprisoned in my own home and for an indefinite amount of time, and I'd still rather be here than reading a sex scene out to a friend while looking into their eyes.
I also don't think that even partners can do that. I don't think people in relationships can do that to each other.
No, it's awful. Worse.
Yeah, but our director was a friend of mine as well, so that was good. I've known her since I was about 19, so she was very unsqueamish and
very hardcore, actually.
Really hardcore, just like, right,
no
okay. So that was really helpful.
Yeah.
We cared so much about that story and those characters by the end of it that it was like, yeah.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
And the feminist core of it to me is that Charlotte, your character, George, she's for the first time in an opposite sex relationship. Up until this point, she's identified as straight.
Mm.
And her being able to love and be intimate with Mae's character is joyful and exciting. But her being able to say to the world, I'm a queer woman, I'm bisexual, is very difficult because it's not how she identifies. And she's now stepping into this strange place.
Mm.
And her gender expression is femme, so she can hide this. There's not going to be these assumptions and projections made about her, which is my situation. So what did you learn from playing that?
I learned so much. Like, firstly, I think that a lot of the kind of storyline to do with George is that it's not just her sexuality that is repressed. Like, her entire existence is kind of quite lonely, quite closed off. She's not hugely emotional and she's not very invested. It's a kind of flip-flop between her being both not emotionally sort of free and also not being sexually free. So
mm-hmm.
in all ways, she's bound into this way of being that just isn't what suits her. And so I think with May, she finds this kind of like new way of expressing herself, new intimacy, new like things that she finds funny, like every element. She kind of, they move in together and she sort of starts this new personality. And when her world collides with her old personality, which is how she is with her friends and her mum, and you kind of see where that comes from, it's so much more. I think that's a huge part of it, is that she's repressing all sorts of sides of herself. But I mean, I learned loads in terms of like just the very invisible boxes that you're brought up to sort of tick and how unbelievably visible they become when you start challenging them. I'm just so, so aware now. It's happening just generally. And I think I feel so grateful to be in a time where I can be learning about so many things and so many different perspectives. But you just, once you see these boundaries, once you see these sort of unbelievably strict ways of living and you realize how much you're living within them, it's like blindingly obvious and you can't go back from having seen them and you feel like a fucking idiot.
So yeah, I think so many of us are living at half mast. We're living within the confines of what we see and what we're trying to live up to. And we're dodging people's projections all the time. And if you are in a minority group and it's obvious you're in a minority group, i.e. your minority cannot be hidden, then you have to every day try and push back other people's projections, or you're just exhausted. You go, fine, think that about me, assume that about me, decide that I'm different. And what I loved about this was George's character coming to a point where she was happy to say, and what it took really to get her to say, this is who I am, and this is a part of who I am, and this is valid, and this is who I love, and this is who I want to be with, and to say that those things out loud. Are there any questions you'd like to ask each other?
Ooh.
Now's the time.
This is now Guilty Feminist Roulette. Never done this before. This is the first time.
Scale of 1 to 10, how cool do you think I am?
10 out of 10. Cool. Oh, sorry.
You thought I said loser.
Yeah, sorry. I thought you said loser.
What was the most difficult part of filming? No, wait, what was the best part? Yeah. What was your favorite scene?
That's really hard. No, not because there's not any, because there's so many. Can you come back to me on that? Because I'm having a brain blank. There's loads coming up.
May, can I ask you the same question? Any favorite scenes or harder scenes to film, or favorite scenes or harder scenes to watch?
Ooh, yeah, I find it really hard to watch the breakup scene, and I did not like doing it, but in a sort of satisfyingly grim way. Like, it was so unpleasant, but at the end of it I felt grimly satisfied, I'd say. And
that's a great name for your next stand-up hour.
Grimly satisfied. Yeah,
good, actually. Yeah,
I might change my name to Grimly Martin.
Can your middle name be Satisfied? Grimly Satisfied Martin.
Grimly Satisfied. Grimly actually really suits me.
Grimly really suits you.
There's something Grimly very Martin, very Tolkien-esque about it. I think my favorite scene to film was the slow dancing scene in episode 4. I felt very emotional.
Very emotional.
Yeah, it was nice. I mean, it's nice to slow dance with anybody for a couple of hours. Also, you know, having been in relationships with people who've struggled to be openly affectionate or whatever, it felt meaningful to get to write an experience where that's not the case and have that fantasy happen. Mm-hmm. That was nice. Yeah.
And can I ask you, May, is there anything that surprised you about the response to this show?
Well, when we did a press screening and then we did a day of press afterwards, and I was really surprised by how many people were saying there's so much sex in this show and there's tons of sex, and there really isn't compared to Fleabag or Girls or Sex Education. There's so little, but it was interesting that it jumped out so much at people, I think, because it's a different type of sex than people have seen, or maybe because there's strap-ons involved or something. But really, it's a show about a relationship, so it would be such a weird omission if there was no sex.
It's very useful to see that, because quite honestly, if you're a woman trying to have same-sex sex for the first time and another woman says to you, what are you interested in trying? Your experience can be very much going, I don't know what there is. Like, what's could I see a menu, please?
Yeah.
And your show, Grace Petrie is laughing into hand. But there is a really valid question if you don't watch porn, which I don't. I'm just not a porn person. I don't like it. It doesn't do anything for me. If anything, it sort of turns me off. And I think this show was very gentle, but it showed this. There's a really amazing moment in it where your character, May, is using a strap-on with George, and she says, come inside of me. It's a really incredible scene.
Thanks. Thank you, yeah.
Let's not talk about that anymore.
No, I mean, it's interesting how much kind of, like, sex talk is quite gendered, I guess. But yeah, I mean, to be honest, if I was having sex with someone and they said, come inside me, I'd be so fine with it. But where that character's at that moment and the dysphoria that she's feeling and the confusion, it's just the perfectly wrong thing to say in that moment. And it pushes her over the edge into total panic.
There's issues of gender identity as well, because the line that several of my friends have WhatsApped me about personally and privately that meant so much to them. You will know the line better than I will, but it's something along the lines of I'm not a girl and I'm not a boy either.
I'm not a boy. I'm not even a girl. I'm a failed version of both. It's so funny because
one of the ones who WhatsApped it to Deb, I think.
Oh, really?
That's
been amazing. The number of people who've written me as well about that line or made memes of it, and it's also a bit like that. Really, you know, is a difficult thing to say as well and to write. And so now it's all over the internet, all these pictures of that moment, and it's quite a personal kind of thing. So, but it's so nice how people are relating to it.
So I think if you're somebody who has experienced dysphoria or wants to understand it in a less binary world, in a world where genderqueer people are finally making more visible space for themselves, genderqueer people and genderfluid people have always been with us, but now visibly some more space is being taken, and there is an enormous patriarchal pushback against that. And even some people who previously I would have felt were in my feminist community are experiencing a great fear. And I think your show is such a beautiful and accessible way in to just open a door.
Thanks.
To talk about that.
And I hope,
you say, like, you would prefer there to be no labels.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think so. But I guess we're nowhere close to there yet. But I hope we're moving towards a place of more fluidity and things like that. But I think also both those characters, both George and May, they have a lot of shame and internalized shame. So I'm interested in that and how, as the world moves forward and there's pressure to be, if you're non-binary or trans or whatever, to be really vocal and really proud, and that's hard sometimes, you know? So I think that character's, like, because that's not true, right? Non-binary people are not failed versions of boys and girls, but that's what she feels in that moment.
Well, that's what's beautiful about drama and comedy, is that you can go to those places. Charlotte, is there anything else you would like to tell us about your experience making the show, or anything else that you feel about feminism, quarantine, now, feel good, love?
Yeah, I think that what's so lovely about this and what Joe and May have written is that whilst it means so much to so many people, it's through a very sort of personal take. And I think that it humanizes everybody. Like, I feel like it's very easy to be very, I mean, we've said this already, but when people are being very sort of binary and talking, it's so hard even to talk about these topics without using very binary terms, like without categorizing people. And I feel like what I loved about watching it and reading it and kind of talking about it with Joe and May was just the fact that each person has such a personal relationship to each of these aspects of their lives. And I feel like that's so often lost when there's like long, big group discussions about and kind of group think. Everyone has nuanced feelings about their relationship with that. So But it turns out maybe actually a lot of, oh, sorry, I'm sort of rambling. But I just think that's really special.
Keep,
but it's very
talking. It's lovely.
Personal.
Yeah, I think it was really important to us that there's some ambiguity. I mean, even in terms of whether May and George are right for each other, you know, and that's often the case in life, isn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. Very much so. I'm very excited about season two because I want to know what happens.
Me too.
Can you tell us now, May? Can you tell us now?
Yeah, basically.
Are you writing it with Joe on Zoom?
Deborah shows up and she's like, "Si casa y mu." What is it? Oh, fuck, I fucked it up.
Can I be in
Si casa y mu?
Si casa y mu. Fuck, I almost got it.
It means your house is my house.
Su casa y mi casa. That would have been so good.
Say my house is your house and I'm saying your house is my house. I would really like to just inexplicably come in, drop that line in my Vivienne Westwood dress. You never see me again. No one knows why.
Si casa y mu.
Yeah, and the and the character description will be glamorous young neighbor appears.
Yes, well, young might be pushing it, but let's not dwell on it. I don't want to not get my own part because you've written the character description so flatteringly that they take one look at me in casting and go, what? And a final question from me is: Lisa Kudrow nice? I'm a feminist, but is she lovely?
So
nice.
Lovely.
And do you have her WhatsApp and do you still like WhatsApp in a group?
No, we email. We've been sending emails that when I get one in my inbox, I feel 13 years old. I get so excited. But she was so supportive and amazing.
That's what I would hear when the email dropped.
Yeah.
You need to make that her special tone.
If anyone is listening to this and they haven't seen the show The Comeback with Lisa Kudrow,
you've got to watch it.
It's on Amazon and you've got to watch it. Season two was the comeback.
Season two was like 10 years after season one.
Yeah.
Because it was literally about what had happened in the decade in between, almost other changes. There is one, and this was way before Me Too. There is one episode where she's on a set and she's having to simulate a blowjob.
Yeah.
The whole episode, it changed my life.
It's amazing.
It Me Too'd me before Me Too. It opened the door and it made me go, yes. Thank you. This is what's happening. And it was so clearly from her experience in show business. I'm not saying it was autobiographical, but her observation on the way women are used, objectified, discarded, traded, the way men own spaces like that, the way cis men take up space in those spaces and their expectations of women and how women are treated. It's incredible. I cannot recommend The Comeback more highly. I'm glad you've reminded me about that. But especially the second season, and especially that episode, it's absolutely ridiculously incredible.
Isn't it?
I just wanted to say thank you so much for bringing us this show. It shows how story can have more power than facts. And we must, beyond this point, because we know there'll be a recession, we must carve out space to find ways of telling stories. We must demand that those with money don't close down and go, let's have this safe story, and safe looks like this one homogenized thing. So watch Feel Good while in the prison of your own home, as Sarah Pascoe says, and then take those messages out there and join me in exploring your queer side.
Yeah.
That brings us to our very special musical guest today, Grace Petrie. Grace Petrie. Grace Petrie,
please welcome your
woman.
Queer side.
Can I say, and we can edit this out if you want, when we were in Melbourne.
What were you going to say? Okay.
When we were on tour together, we can edit it out. I came up with a new nickname for Grace. What was my nickname for you, Grace?
You can leave this in if you want. It's proved woefully untrue lately. The Galchemist is what Deb started calling me.
That's because she can turn the base metals of straight woman into the gold of queer woman whenever she wants.
Yeah.
Constant straight women flood to her after the feminist shows and just in general in the street.
Well,
we'd be having brunch, up would come someone who previously identified as straight, and there's an awakening. What we would refer to as the lesbian quake that can sometimes happen when previously identifying straight women hang around Grace Petrie, and that's why I call her the Galchemist.
Well, that's great.
Let me tell you, lockdown is a barren land, mate.
I thought people were audaciously
starting
into your
DMs.
There is
no queer quakes happening in Leicester, I'll tell you that. The risk scale is pretty quiet.
Grace, well, can we Can we start a band called The Galchemist and Grimley?
Oh, please.
Yes, we can.
I am buying that album.
Yeah. Yeah, but I wanted to just briefly, you can cut this out, but I wanted to just briefly say as well, in line with this, my long history of having been with girls who were previously only in opposite sex relationships, when Feel Good came on, one of my friends WhatsApped me and said, pretty rude of Mae Martin to write a TV show specifically about you, Grace Petrie.
That's so like, nice.
This is why I'm identifying very hard. It's because
yeah, first of all, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah, thanks. It's well, you know, it's a, as I said before, it's a wonderful piece of work. But
thank you so much.
I also just wanted to say as well, if I could say my favourite scene, I absolutely loved, and I think it is maybe the funniest thing I've ever seen ever, is in the finale when George tries to like make this big moment at school and be like, I'm teaching LGBT issues.
Oh god.
And
yeah,
their teacher's like, you should have been doing that the whole time.
so good.
So well written. Anyway, yeah. We thought it was so good. Yeah. So Ben and I, we're like in accidental lockdown together because we were on tour in Australia immediately after the Guilty Feminist tour, and then Corona hit and our tour got cut short, and so we flew home, and now poor old Ben is just like stuck in my house.
Oh my god, he can't go anywhere.
We watched it all together, and I was just sitting there feeling every single line, and there were so many times where Ben just kept
it felt like looking at Grace during it would be like attacking her. every line that I was like, that seems familiar in some way, but should I check in with Grace? How's she doing?
That's so nice. Yeah, the response has been insane. Like people are doing so much art and drawing these beautiful things. And people, a girl wrote a song that's amazing. I just sent it to you, Charlotte, but it's really good.
I watched it. It's so
it's
lovely.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
I can't remember her name. Rowan, I think.
It must feel so good, May.
In the show notes if you send us the link.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. It's amazing. I mean, it's a weird juxtaposition of feelings because civilization as we know it is ending, so
it's just having a hiatus,
but it's really keeping me afloat. The love for the show is unreal. Yeah, I mean, you know, Deb, I was doing a podcast with you in the years of writing the show and
Grown Up Land. Yes, still on BBC Sounds, and Sophie Duca is in your seat now.
Yes, so you remember like the anxiety and the years of talking about it and worrying about it. Yeah. So the fact that
every time
it's done,
I saw you, you'd be like, oh, I've been working with Joe all day on this. And then I remember when Lisa Kudrow got cast and the excitement of that.
Yeah.
So yeah, seeing it come to fruition has just been incredible.
Totally. I can't believe it's out there now.
So in response to the quarantine, I'd like to plug that I am doing a show 6 p.m. British summer time every day, Monday to Friday, called The Guilty Feminist, The New Normal, in which I ask a regular Guilty Feminist guest co-host or friend of the show the same questions about how they're coping and their strategies. And it's been really emotional, I have to say, been very, very funny, sometimes hysterically funny, but also quite emotional. So if you could tune in live at 6, you could comment. Mae Martin's going to be doing it next week. Mae Martin, you're doing Wednesday, yeah, next week?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Exciting. If you're not on Instagram, you can make a fake account. Just put one picture up just so you can watch it. It's at The Guilty Feminist, and I'll leave it up on the story for 24 hours. Then we put them to YouTube. So please go and check out The New Normal. Also, The New Normal are doing merch t-shirts based on funny things that comedians have said. You can find those on the merch store, and all the money goes directly to the artists who've said it. Or if they're fabulously wealthy because they've just made a Netflix show like Mae Martin, she might donate her t-shirt money to another comedian who is currently struggling because they live gig to gig.
No, I'm taking it.
She's taking the money. It's always roulette with Mae Martin in one way or another. You never know. Also, I would like to say that I've referenced my coming outness, and I first talked about this on a podcast that is not yet out, but is coming out. It's by Catherine Bohart and Sarah Keyworth, and it's called You'll Do. They are a couple and they're interviewing couples. And they interviewed Tom Zielinski and me, and we talked about our relationship and we opened up a little bit. It's not all about that. Most of it's just about how great our relationship is, but we did talk about it. And I really wanted to talk about it there first because it gave Tom an equal voice. And so that podcast is called You'll Do. You can listen to the episodes that are up, and our episode will be out in a week or two. So watch out for that, and I'll direct you to it when it comes out. But in that, I unpack it a lot more and talk a lot more about it. And Tom gets a voice about how he's feeling about everything and how it's deepened our relationship and made it more intimate and lovelier.
I keep thinking that it's the apocalypse, and so I should just confess my love to everyone. But I got to remember, we're going to come back.
We're going to come out the other end.
Yeah. But it's very tempting to just go mad.
If you want to confess your love for me, mate, I'm right here for it.
All right, stay tuned.
I'll see you on Chat Roulette.
Yeah.
If I come up, it's meant to be. So, Charlotte, do you have anything else you'd like us to plug? It could be a piece of online feminism that you'd like us to do. It could be something else that we'd, perhaps a back catalogue of yours on Netflix or somewhere that you'd like us to watch.
I don't have anything.
I wish I did. I could plug stuff. Can I plug stuff for you, Charlotte?
It depends on what it's going to be. I was just going to say I can plug maybe people feeling quite unproductive during this time and maybe say that I stand in solidarity with them. And I think it's going to be a lot of sleeping and wishing that I was more productive and more creative. Go on, May. What were you going to say? Sorry.
There's an audiobook of a Charlotte Bronte novel that Charlotte is reading. And it's very, very relaxing and great. And then also,
to be fair, it's Charlotte Bronte. It's so good.
Beautiful.
It's really sad. It's the best description of a woman suffering from depression, but she doesn't call it that. But
what's it called again?
It's called Villette.
Villette. Mm,
oh,
yeah.
Boy. She was good.
And also...
widely thought to be.
Yeah. I think so too, actually.
Yeah.
Also, what's the song that I love? Oh, yeah. Everyone should go on YouTube and watch the song Hammerite.
May Martin, do you have anything you'd like to plug or any feminist online action you'd like us to take, given we're all trapped inside our houses?
Oh, God. No. I'm just so thrilled people are watching the show and I'm just trying to survive with everyone.
Okay. I would like people to just check in on Choose Love because refugee camps are a really tough place to have coronavirus and they're a really tough place to keep clean and keep socially distanced. We are complaining about how often we're washing our hands and how far we have to stand away from people, but it is, of course, a privilege to be able to wash our hands and stay away from people. So if everyone could go and support Choose Love, if you don't have anything to give because you're really strapped for cash because you've lost your job or whatever, I really understand that. But if you could amplify them, a lot of people still have their job and now they're not going to the pub and their gym membership's being suspended and suddenly they have a lot of extra money that under these circumstances they wouldn't mind giving. Also, could you check out local refuges where you are, because a lot of people are in domestically violent relationships and have to run because they're in the middle of a quarantine or they might need to talk to somebody on a refuge line or get some kind of help. So the more we can donate to refuges and food banks at this time, the better.
That was a much better answer than what
I
said.
Yeah, really good.
All I said was watch my show and
it's fine. I'm used to being plugged into these things and people very kindly send me ideas for these things. And I've been thinking a lot about people for whom this quarantine is a lot worse than it is for us. So that's our online feminist action.
There's one thing, I mean, I'm sure people all know about this, but my housemate alerted me to, when it all started, the mutual aid groups on Facebook. You can all join your local mutual aid and then you get a WhatsApp group for your road. And then everyone's been flyering, and anyone who's on their own and can't go to the shops, you can go to the shops for them. That's a good thing to look up. COVID-19 mutual aid. Yeah.
I have been messaging daily a few friends of mine who are quarantined completely alone just to check in with them, even if it's just like a 2-minute FaceTime.
Yeah.
And what I've realized from that is you're throwing out a rope to somebody who may otherwise be entirely isolated. But what I've discovered is I've got the other end of that rope. So if I need to pull on it, I'm checking in with that person once a day. If I'm falling apart or I'm feeling really low, guess what? I have my little check-in call with this person to look forward to. Grace Petrie, do you have anything to plug?
I do, actually. Amongst everybody else that this time is very difficult for, the Big Issue is really struggling at the moment because Big Issue vendors, obviously, for their own and everybody else's safety, are also on lockdown and they can't obviously sell the magazine while that is going on. But what you can do, if you're somebody who normally buys the Big Issue when you're out and about, and obviously with the caveats, is if you have the money at the moment, I know a lot of us don't, but if you do, you can subscribe to the Big Issue at the moment. If you subscribe for 3 months, it's £32. Or so you can just make them a one-off donation. So Ben and I are doing these cover songs every night. We're posting a different cover every night. And there's actually a Just Giving link underneath those. So if you're following me on social media, then you can just whack some money to the Big Issue as well. That'd be great.
And it is really fun to watch Grace and Ben's online A to Z of covers. They do a different letter of the alphabet every night, which is
I'm definitely going to check that out. That sounds great.
It's very
sounds
fun.
So good.
And can I the make... other night they really lost it, and isolation had clearly got to them, and they just fell on the floor laughing.
We're normally more professional than that. That happened once.
They're not. That's fake.
We had just on
if
the...
you could, can I just reiterate, if you think, oh, but I don't have money to give to any of these people, giving them a follow tells them you see them. Retweeting them, someone with a huge now disposable income with nothing to do with it, they might donate. But also plug into your friends who have a disposable income and still have their job and say, hey, would you consider a Big Issue subscription right now? Because they're literally sitting at home with nothing to do. So if you messaged them and said, look, I'm trying to get five friends to do this. I can't afford it. You know that I'm a casual worker and I now no longer have any hours. But my job is now to try and make sure five people support the Big Issue or Choose Love or this local refuge. That's going to make a huge difference. You may feel you can't do that for whatever reason, but in which case, give it a retweet, a quote tweet. If you might say, well, I'm not on Instagram. Well, get on Instagram. You've got nothing else to do. Just do it. We can be feminist from home. Hello, Guilty Feminists. I just wanted to let you know that Catherine Bohart and Sarah Keyworth's podcast, You'll Do, in which they, in a relationship, interview couples in a relationship, is out now on BBC Sounds and is very good. The episode in which Tom Selinsky and I talk about our relationship and I unpack our open relationship more in an environment where Tom and I can talk about it together is coming out on the 21st of April. So subscribe to that podcast now if you don't want to miss it. Otherwise, if you want to hear more about it, put it in your diary and have a listen to that episode especially. Thank you so much and back to the podcast. And now to our wonderful musical guests, Grace Petrie and Ben Moss. Do you have a relevant song, Grace, for this episode?
Do I have a single solitary song about falling in love with a straight girl? Let me check the back catalogue and see if I can rustle anything up that is relevant
to these
issues.
Has that ever happened to you, Grace?
Has that ever happened to me? Who knows?
Has that ever not happened to you, Grace?
No. Okay. This is a song that I wrote quite a few years ago when I was dating somebody, and it is about my attempt to be everything that she wanted me to be, and it's called Cold Waterproof Jacket. And it goes like this. To make a claim to any half-decent band name, it's too much to hope there'd be any good tunes left. But I've been around and I've seen enough to know my strong suit isn't love. I won't give away my heart and call it theft. I won't give away my heart and call it theft. Well, I know you're locked up like a fortress. I'd wait forever at your doors, and even if they never open, you don't need to be mine, but I'll be yours, but I'll be yours, yours. I'll be your cold waterproof jacket. Get me on when you just can't hack it. Your last ticket, spare fibre. Like a deep sea diver, when you're breaking, you can't take it. Get me out like a heart first aid kit. Get me out, I'm your heart first aid kit. Whoa, 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 whoa. Well, I was born too late to make a claim to any half decent band name. It's too much to hope there'd be any good tunes left. I've been around and I've seen enough. I know my strong suit isn't love. I won't give away my heart and call it theft. I won't give away my heart and call it theft. Well, I know you're locked up like a fortress. I'd wait forever at your doors. And even if they never open, you don't need to be mine. I'll be yours, yours. I'll be your cold waterproof jacket. Get me on when you just can't hack it. Your last ticket, spare fibre. I bring you up like a deep sea diver. When you're breaking, you can't take it. Get me out like a heart first aid kit. Get me out, I'm your heart first.
liberating. You can't say it. Get me out like a heart first aid kit. Get me out, I'm your heart first aid kit. Get me out, I'm your heart, I'll be your AA card. Last train home. Pocket change when you need a payphone. Whenever you need me. You're overdraft, yo, you can't exceed me. And you're breaking, you can't say it. Get me out like a heart first aid kit. Get me out, I'm your heart first aid kit. Get me out, I'm your heart first aid kit. Get me out like a heart first aid kit. Get me out like a heart first aid kit. Get me out like a heart first aid kit. Get me out like a heart first aid kit. Get me out like a heart first aid kit. Get me out like a heart first aid kit. Get me out like a heart first aid kit. Get me out, I'm your heart first aid kit.
Lovely.
I loved that. Thank you.
Oh, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. That was amazing. Oh, that's a proper George song, isn't it?
You have been listening to The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Francis-White, guest co-host Mae Martin, and our very special guest Charlotte Ritchie, with our musical guests Grace Petrie and Ben Moss. The Guilty Feminist theme tune was composed by Mark Hodge and produced by Nick Sheldon. Producer was Tom Selinsky for The Spontaneity Shop, next to Rachel Craftman, Gina DiCio, and everyone who made this episode happen, as well as all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfeminist.com.
Turn your camera around.
I mean, I would love it if Grace Petrie turned her camera around and then when she turned it back, she was just wanking.
Yeah.
The night it's is young, doing... Deb, to be honest. My standards have never been lower.
Hey.
Okay.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.